Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, it's Caroline from GThanks Just Bought It, reminding you that in between episodes, you can find me on Instagram at GThanks Just Bought It Pod. You can find products that don't make it onto the episodes and recommendations from listeners like you. So before you start this episode, give it a follow and say hi in the comments. And for a full list of every product we featured on GThanks, visit gthanksjustboughtit.com/episodes. See you there. Hey everyone, welcome to another week of GThanks Just Bought It, the podcast where we tell you what we just bought and what you might need to buy next. I'm your host, Caroline Moss, and this week I am joined by Tonette Griffin. Tonette is a New Yorker, a New Jerseyer, a New Jerseyan. What do they call New Jersey inns? Inns?
I think it's ands.
New Jerseyans. She's a New Jerseyan. Okay, so Tonette lives in New Jersey. She works full-time as a producer for an event marketing agency. And by night, she runs a reselling business on Poshmark, which I think is so amazing. She runs it from her living room. She was kind of doing it. You were doing it like a little bit of a side hustle?
Totally. Totally as a side hustle. It was part side hustle, part desperation from the lack of interviews that I was getting from after I moved up to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. And now it's like a full, you were like a full-fledged reselling machine.
Full-fledged reselling machine. It's been kind of crazy and just the way that it's blown up. Mm-hmm. I've started with reselling items from my own personal closet. Most of the items that I had that sort of launched my seed money that I used to reinvest into the business were from selling all of my Forever 21 and H&M Video Girl Club Girl dresses.
Yep.
That I'd totally grown out of. and what I did was I took the first small little lump sum of money that I made from my Poshmark sales. And mm-hmm. I used that. And I went to the local Salvation Army that's right down the street from me. And I would load up on all of the brands that sell really well on Poshmark. So yeah, that's
wow.
The short and dirty of
it. I'm already like Google. I'm like already thinking about Googling. I'm like, okay, are the Goodwills near me in LA open right now? Like, should I go do that in an hour? The answer is no, because LA is being hit really hard by the pandemic right now, and I'm not dumb enough to leave the house. But that is so amazing. That is so cool. Like, that is so cool.
Mm-hmm. The Goodwills out in LA where you are like a gold mine.
Okay.
I would die.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking Reformation. You're talking COS, you're talking Everlane, all of the good stuff.
I'm available. I will be your West Coast partner. I will go into the, when it's like safe enough to go, I'll go scouting for you. I'll go get clothes and stuff, because the secondhand scene in LA, you're right, is so good.
It's so good.
It's literally like rich and famous people dropping, like giving their assistants garbage bags of stuff to drop off, and then you're like going through and finding like so much good stuff. Because I did that for a day, you know, in the 4 weeks that I had before the stay-at-home orders were put in place, and I was like, I'm gonna do this all the time. That didn't really work out, but I have dreams of returning to it, and I love that you have made this your full-time life.
Yes, it's kind of crazy. So one of my secrets actually, is that I actually, so before COVID and before mm-hmm. everything shut down, I was exclusively sourcing all of my inventory from Salvation Army.
Okay.
So for all of the people that live in New Jersey, in Jersey City, the Salvation Army right off of the Holland Tunnel is the plug.
Wow. I know that Salvation Army. That is awesome.
Yeah. It's so crazy. That has been my go-to. Goodwill, actually, they're, for me at least, the Goodwills are a little further out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started sourcing specifically to find like really good brands, I found that the Salvation Army right next to me, next to the Holland Tunnel, had a really, really great healthy supply of items that people, you know, like me, that people that are like me who are from my same age group,
mm-hmm.
Would regularly donate. So every week I would go and I would find a whole rack of Lululemon.
No.
Freshly donated. And
that blows my mind.
Obviously there's a lot of, you know, you have to pick and choose, yes. and do a lot of in-store reviewing and specking to make sure that the items that you're, you know, investing in are actually of good quality.
Yep.
So, for me at least, Salvation Army has a really great price point, and in New York at least, it's like, I'd say 50%, they charge 50% less than the Goodwills do.
Wow.
And it's the same in New Jersey. So for me, trying to, you know, make sure that I'm investing wisely. And back when I first started, which was a year ago, I was giving myself a $50 limit. Every 2 weeks I would go $50, and I would go in and I would find as much as I could that made sense, that was flippable, that I knew would sell well. And
now when you say flippable, are you doing anything? Are you like kind of making any modifications to the product? Like, are you like hemming things, or like, or is it really truly like you turn around, you sell it as is, and you can make a profit?
When I first started, it really truly was going in and buying something straight off the rack.
Yep.
Bringing it home, washing it, steaming it, photographing it, and listing it on Poshmark.
Wow.
Clothes, shoes, jewelry, with that type of stuff, I try to be really careful about finding things that needed to have a lot of repair.
Yep.
Mostly because I know myself, and that, you know, while I am in the store and I may see that it has a minor tear on it and it might be from a really great brand, the reality is, on the flip side, is that once I bring it home, I'm probably going to lose all motivation to fix that rip and fix that tear and make it back to new.
Yes.
Especially when, you know, you're working with an inventory of like 500 items. I tried to be really careful about that. In the beginning, I was a lot more, I had a lot more lofty dreams about what things I did have the ability to fix.
Sure.
And some of those things just have not seen the light of day on my inventory list, because I haven't been able to fix them. So
what's the first thing that you can remember selling that you got at Goodwill? Like, what did you pay for it, and then what did it end up selling for? And then after all of the like Poshmark fees, like, what did you make? Like, what was your profit?
Oh my gosh, Caroline, I have so many crazy stories.
Tell me everything. Oh, like, we all want to hear everything. I'm telling you.
Yeah. So I will tell. So I bought a brand new pair of Loafler Randall sandals that were still selling in stores in Bergdorf. And this brand is like a really high end couture brand.
Yep.
The sandals had never been worn before. They were literally brand new. I paid $20 for them, which for me is a lot of money, because mind you, my limit was $50.
Right.
So I'd already spent half of that on like a single item. But when I found them, I looked them up. I Googled them right there in the store and I saw what they were selling for and I didn't see a lot of comps and I thought to myself, this is literally gold.
What were they selling for?
And they were selling for brand new, like $395.
What?
I resold them on Poshmark for I think $120. So
holy shit.
And Poshmark, they take 20% out of anything that's over, I think, $10 is what they take. But so my takeaway from that was, you know, I made like $100.
I mean,
which was
awesome.
Wow. And then I have another story I bought a pair of Doc Marten boots for $4.
No. Oh my God.
It's insane. They were worn maybe once and then donated for whatever reason.
Sure.
I paid $4 for them. I sold them for $80 and my profit was like $72.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It's pretty crazy. So I don't know. I have this crazy like knack for finding. So right now because everything's been shut down, I haven't been able to go thrifting, which is, you know, the thing that brings me so much joy. I mean, it's like shopping, but for yourself, but like a dream version of yourself.
Because
half the stuff that I find, I'm, you know, totally not able to wear.
But it's also like shopping for money. Like that's even more fun. Like you're literally going shopping for money.
It ups the heart rate, you know, when you find something that's like a pair of Citizens of Humanity jeans that are selling for $3, you know, at the thrift store.
Damn.
You can flip them for $120, and that's what's helped me pay a lot of my bills.
Yeah, that is so cool. Like that is so smart. And I do imagine, and now knowing, like I know the LA secondhand scene is so strong, and New York it definitely is too. Though New York, I think it's cool. I think it's great that you've been focusing on Salvation Army's in New Jersey, because sometimes you go into like the Housing Works in New York, and I love Housing Works. I support their mission. But they like know what they have. You know what I mean?
They totally know. Goodwill knows.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Totally.
You know, I have a love-hate relationship with the higher end thrift stores in New York, because you know the minute you walk in there, you can so easily drop like a grand.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like easily. Like it's unbelievable. And it's, you know, it's the fashion capital of the
exactly.
world.
Exactly. It's
so.
even the vintage-y thrift stores are like curated, you know, in a way. And they're curated by people who like understand fashion and understand
who know it.
The market. Right. So I feel like it's even more exciting to kind of go to and not like New Jersey is a small town, but I'm thinking about the Salvation Army in Western Massachusetts where I went to college. And it's like, yeah, you would find really fun stuff there. Like you're less likely to find, you know, like designer pieces just because of the location of where you are. But like it was almost more fun to spend an hour like going through every single t-shirt, every single pair of jeans, and then you'd find something. I was only shopping for me, but you would find something so much fun and so great. And it was just like finding a treasure versus some of the stores in New York, like every single thing you see in there has already been purchased or like someone's already done the flipping and now they're trying to
like
sell
they
it
know.
To you. Yeah, exactly. They know.
They totally know. They operate almost like a, what's it called? Buffalo
Exchange. Yeah, like a consignment. Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's wild. And I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about, so many things I haven't been into a thrift store in so long, but I wanted to talk about this a little later, but I have been thrifting from the streets recently.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
It's totally been like a complete game changer. But before we go there, I love thrifting. And when I first started, I started with the purpose of making money so that I could like live, you know?
Yes.
I when I came to New York, I came with the goal of immediately finding a job in the industry and, you know, continuing on my career. But Rude Awakening was when it took me an entire year to find a full-time employment. Yeah. And during that whole time, I had done like hundreds of phone interviews. I've submitted like over 500 applications.
Yep.
And when push comes to shove, then the reality is you've got all these bills knocking at your door. Like, yeah. You've just got to get creative and pivot. And that's basically what I did. Mm-hmm. And it was so awesome being able to start on a really simple platform like Poshmark, because they make it really easy for you, but you still have to do the work.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, day in, day out, very early days, very late nights trying to make sales. So,
tell me a little bit about more about that. Tell me a little bit more about, like, you know,
the process.
Yeah, I mean, I've used Poshmark before, but like, just when you say early day, you know, what do you have to do to put? There's so many people on Poshmark, right? There's so much stuff on Poshmark.
There are like 40 million users.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to be a marketing professional, which, I mean, I guess you are. Like, you are a marketing professional, but you have to know. It's all about the photos and the description,
right?
and like tagging things and like how, you know, what's your process?
So for me, when I first started, I started thrifting with the idea of finding things that I knew sold really well.
Mm-hmm.
And starting out on this platform or any other reselling platform, it comes with a shit ton of learnings, you know?
Right.
It's really hard when you go into a store and you find... So I sourced a Athleta tank top a year ago.
Okay.
With the belief that, you know, just knowing that Athleta sells really well, it's a really great brand, it's always sold really well for me. And a year later today, it finally sells.
Now, are you changing the prices? Like, what's going on there?
What I did was I relisted it, and this was probably the fifth time that I relisted this tank top.
Wow.
And I sold it at a much lower price point than what I would realistically have liked to sell it at. But
tell me specifically, like, what did you buy it for? And then what were you hoping to sell it at?
I purchased it for $3.
Okay.
I sold it for $12, or I had it on sale. I listed it at $15. Okay. I sold it for $12.
Okay.
And my profit is $7.93.
Okay.
So my revenue net is $4.93.
Okay.
So stuff like that, to be really successful, to be one of those resellers that makes like six figures, they have like garages where they have thousands of those types of items in their inventory, where a $5 profit, if you do that five times a day times, you know, 500, that, you know, it breaks even for you.
Wow.
But for me, who I only have my little corner of the dining room, it's tough, because you go in at the time knowing that brand sells really well, and then it magically just doesn't, for it just sits there for a year.
Sure.
So some of the things that have helped me make sales is just, you know, just to talk about the process. So every day I get up really early. I will share everything in my entire closet. And I usually have between 150, 200 items, 'cause that's the amount that my apartment will hold before it bursts open.
Okay.
And if you know New York, you know, our living quarters are quite
tight.
Teeny
and tight. Yeah.
The compromise for having a dining room was me having my Poshmark business. So
I love that.
And so I get up every morning, I share my closet. I try to share it at least 5 times a day.
Okay.
And depending on, you know, the volume of items that I have in my closet, and the schedule of my day for work, it's pretty decent. And then I look at what the parties are. There's a lot of different things that Poshmark does. Like, they do a lot of parties.
They do parties. That's like, you know, like best of tops or like best dresses, stuff like that, right?
Yeah. And, cool. You know, honestly, in the beginning, when I first started out, I thought, you know, I spent a lot of time focusing on getting a pick, having someone, one of the party hosts pick one of my items to be promoted during the party. And I realized, you know, 6 months later that doesn't actually help you make sales, which is a sad reality and a sad truth. But the thing that does help you make sales is having that item or having any of your items shared by all of the hundreds of thousands of people that are participating in that party. So it's a little bit of a tug of war, because the platform as it stands, they do have a lot of systems in place to help you get your listing to the top of the search engines.
Okay.
But most of it really is you sharing your items and making sure that you have like the freshest descriptions. You have to have measurements and all of your listings. For me, when I sell clothes, I usually have a measuring tape nearby, and I'll photograph the shirt with the measuring tape.
Wow.
In the picture, so that people can see, you know, just for their eyes' sake, that the bust measurement of the dress is what it says it is.
Yep.
And it also just saves time. So that's a tip that I have, which is when you're photographing your item, use a measuring tape in your pictures. Don't bother writing out the measurements in the description. Just use the measuring tape and people can see it right there.
Yeah, because they don't have like a return process, right? It's like it's kind of like a final sale unless the buyer is like lying to you.
Totally. Yeah. So that's probably one of the best tricks that I learned this year, because it saved me a hell of a lot of time. I've never been someone that shopped by measurements because my body measurements, I got a whole hourglass working over here, and what fits through Zara does not fit through Madewell.
We have that conversation all the time on this podcast, and like just how every store has its own version of like a 12 or a 14 or a 16. And actually a guest who is coming on the show the week after you, their item, I'm not going to say who it is because I'm excited about it and no one knows that she's coming on the podcast yet, but their item is a measuring tape. Because she was like, I couldn't figure out, like, I was starting to feel bad about my body because nothing was ever fitting me. And I realized it's just because the clothes are measured in weird ways. And so now I just measure myself and just measure the clothes. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, what a novel idea. Have you noticed kind of like when you have to do those measurements that you make more sales because a lot of those questions are already answered for the potential buyer?
1,000%. And I'll tell you one thing. I have a handful of items that I listed a year ago that haven't moved. And part of me believes that it's I know one thing, probably because the photos aren't good and I haven't updated them. Which is another tip.
Good photos.
And it doesn't, you don't need to do all of the props, and you don't need to have one of the fancy lights that the ring lights. And I do everything, you know, using the wood tile, the wood flooring in my apartment, and I photograph during the day.
Nice.
And I just keep it really simple because time is money.
Yep.
And when you have a lot of things to get through. If you have more time, like maybe trick your setup out and get a ring light and get some like cool marble tile from Home Depot. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I have always just photographed from my floor, mainly because I also love wood floors.
Yeah. Yeah. They always look good against like fabric too, like especially most in the right things. Light.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yep. We're gonna take a really quick break, and then we're gonna come back because one of the reasons, well, when I found Tonette on Instagram, you had posted about like trash day, and so when we come back from our break, we are going to talk about trash day. We will be right back. Okay, we're back. Okay, so you've been doing this for now a year. Are you comfortable kind of saying how much you've made? Doesn't have to be an exact number, but like, do you know? Sure. Like, yeah, what's your profit been like?
So in a year, I've made a little over $8,000.
Whoa, I almost just spit out my water. Whoa, that's so much money.
A little over $8,000, most of which has gone straight to my student loans.
Yep.
And I honestly wish I'd started sooner. I always wanted to do this because I've actually been thrifting. I have been a thrift shopper. Mm-hmm. I personally have thrifted for myself for, I'd say, the last 5 years. I've like exclusively shopped thrift.
It does feel like you have a little bit of a born with it talent here.
Yeah.
I mean, $8,000 is no joke. Like you understand what you're doing.
So that's what I've gotten in the last year. And, you know, majority of that's gone back into my student loans.
Yep.
A portion of that I saved for myself just to try to re-up my little savings nugget that I depleted in the year of, you know, looking for jobs.
Yep.
So I living in the neighborhood that I live in Jersey City is quite quaint. It is very nice. Mm-hmm. And we are very lucky to live here. Just because it's one of those places that's, it's on the up and up, and it has a lot to offer by way of diversity, culture. We, you know, are really good friends with our neighbors. There's like a real true community here. But I will say that one of the main major differences in my experience living here versus living in DC is that on trash day or trash week, people in DC, at least, people usually post the stuff that they're going to throw out on Craigslist to give people like a little bit of a heads up.
Okay.
But here in Jersey City, they don't do that. They just put it all out on the curb. If it's small, like trinket treasure items, like dishes or glassware or sculptures, they'll put it in a box that says like free stuff. Or if it's big furniture pieces, they'll leave it outside with a sign that says, like, please take, I'm free.
Right.
And it is like clockwork. Every Monday and Thursday in our neighborhood, people leave out box loads of trash, which is actually what I call treasures.
Treasures. I love that. Wait, so like,
it's unbelievable.
Like good stuff?
Really, really great stuff. I shared this in a recent post, but I felt like a real true blue pirate person diving under the deep blue sea looking for actual gold, and I found it. Someone on the block away from me put out a whole tub of Southeast Asian sculptures, paintings, just total beautiful relics, casted in gold, iron sculptures, wood sculptures. And for me, I actually have a lot of personal connection with Southeast Asia because I've traveled there a lot and it's just a really amazing place. Mm-hmm. So when I found this, I was like, all right, so you just left it out here for me. You might as well have just written like, this is for Tanette. So I found this huge tub of, I think it's about 15 different sculptures from all over Southeast Asia. And they are in near immaculate shape. Wow. Some of them I've had to do, you know, a little repairing on, but it's incredible. Most of the things that I find that are left out for trash are like home goods.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because on Poshmark in the last year they started a home category.
Oh.
Where you can sell all different types of things from your home. So picture frames, coat racks, you know, wall decor, artwork.
Wow.
So on and so forth.
If Athleta and Lululemon are really popular on Poshmark in terms of clothing, like what is the home stuff that everyone's trying to buy?
I would say anything that's, you know, it's tricky because I feel like I'm kind of biased because for me, if I'm shopping, I'm usually looking for like one of a kind, rustic, weathered items.
Sure.
So for items that I've sold, it's been when I'm out and about, like moving throughout the world and I find these things, that's usually what I find. Mm-hmm. For example, I found this gorgeous mirror that is like perfectly weathered. I think it's from Anthropology. Wow. I ended up keeping it for myself because like, why not?
Yeah, for sure. Why not? And it was on the street. It was totally free.
And it was on the street in a box with, you know, all kinds of different things. There was a Rebecca Minkoff, like iPhone 8 phone case in there too that I took. And then I ended up giving it back because I didn't feel like dealing with having to sell a phone case on Poshmark.
Sure.
But the things that sell really well, I think, on this platform and the things that have sold really well for me are things that have life in them.
Mm.
Things that are artwork, photo frames that have sort of a rustic feel.
Yep.
But then on the clothes front, it's a little different because it's literally, it runs the gamut.
Totally. I've
sold like ball gowns, prom dresses to sneakers, you know, just the whole works.
Wow. How much time are you like spending at the post office?
So that's a really funny question because I haven't been to the post office since probably the beginning of or mid-March when we went to shutdown.
Right.
I have a really great relationship with all of my local USPS carriers and drivers.
Nice.
Where some of us are on like cell phone level comfort, where they'll like text and give a heads up, like if they're in the area. There's only now when I say some, I mean one.
No, but that's so that's so special. Like,
yeah,
who else is texting their mailman or their mailwoman? That's amazing.
I know, right? Yeah, I usually will at 12 o'clock. I mean, it depends on my work schedule. So usually around 12 or 2 o'clock, I'll go and I'll just walk around the neighborhood and I'll have my big bag of packages, which is literally what I did today. And I went and I walked around and I looked for a post office truck and I handed it over to one of the guys that you know, services our neighborhood.
Wow.
And
I didn't even know you could do that.
It's great.
You can just like,
yeah, you can just hand them your packages. I mean, some of them are like, for me, at least in my neighborhood, they're really cool. But some of the new people are like, whoa, stay away.
Right, right. Still trying to figure you out. I'm sure I feel like someone at the post office in Jersey City has to be telling their new team members about you.
So, totally.
Oh, just keep an eye out. She's got a lot of stuff.
There's this. I'm really lucky because in my neighborhood, there are three USPS truck drivers that I am on, like, face and name relationship with. Some of them I know their names, and some I just know their faces. Mm-hmm. And you know, I can, if I see their truck and I recognize them from like a block away, I can wave them down and they'll stop. And if they're at a traffic light, they'll hold up traffic, which, you know, is dangerous in Jersey.
Yeah, because... wow. You have a lot of pull over there. That's,
yeah, it's
impressive.
All right. It's all right. That's... It helps to be nice, really.
That and is awesome.
To say good morning or good afternoon and have a good weekend to them.
Yeah, the obviously, like, kindness does go a long way. But, like, I didn't know any of my mail carriers in Brooklyn because you never see them because
right. They
just go to your apartment building number. You know, they're, you just get dropped off in the box or whatever. And then if you get a package, they just kind of, like, leave it. But now in Los Angeles, I know my guy. His name is Tony. And...
yes.
He's my bud. But yeah, it's kind of like a fun, it's like a different sort of relationship than, because I lived in New York for, like, you know, 10 or 11 years. Like, there's so much community in New York and in New Jersey, like in that tri-state area, but it's so different than somewhere else. So it's been sort of a nice change for me to understand, like, also, like, even if I did see my mail carrier in Brooklyn, there were like 7 of them who would do the same route, you know, so I never saw the same person twice, like, in the same week. But in LA, it's just Tony, it's just me and Tony.
It's so nice. When the office was open, if I had a heavy or a medium day, mm-hmm. I would say when I had a medium shipping day, I would usually try to take all of my stuff with me to the office, and
like
I would drop it off on the path. Yes.
Good for you.
It depends on how much stuff I had to get out that
day.
So if it was like a large batch of stuff that I had to ship, then my partner usually would, I would ask him.
Yes. I'm very familiar with the politely asking of the partner.
Yes, can you please drop this off at the post office?
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I actually really like dropping my own packages off at the post office because it gives me a reason to, like, get out and get up, and B, it's, you know, and when I was working in the city, it was nice to just walk around and you know, use your, like, lunch break for a change. So,
Right. You got to force yourself to get out of your chair. No one's going to make you take a lunch break. So you have to literally be like, I'm leaving now. I will be back in 45 minutes. Yeah. It's nice to have a destination. Like, I'm going to the post office.
Yeah. So I usually would go, I mean, on a good day, I would go and I would drop my stuff off. But, you know, the weather here is always kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So in the wintertime, I would be a little bit more desperate and I'd have to find people on the street, and it's just totally different having to, like, wave down a truck in Manhattan because you feel like a total asshole. Like, you're inconveniencing the pigeons on the street.
Yes, yes.
By trying to stop a USPS truck.
Yeah, it's really true. Yeah, you are, like, that person.
Yes.
Like, you look like, whereas, like, in the neighborhood, there's, like, a nice kind of vibe to it. You know, everyone's just waving to each other. But if you do something like that in New York, it's, like, a lot of people giving you the finger. So, you know, this podcast is about, you know, we do intentional kind of shopping, and not just like intentional shopping, but like we talk a lot about like the things that make us happy and the things that we've bought that change our lives. But you're kind of on the selling side of it. So, like, how have you noticed people's shopping habits changing, you know, in the last couple of months? Like, are you selling more stuff? Are you selling less stuff? Like, what's been going on?
So in the last few months, it's definitely been way less. June, I would say, was my hardest month of the year.
Wow.
And June just, you know, I mean, it's tough to say because, you know, it might get better in July. But I think June was really tough. I did not sell as much in June as I was forecasting.
Uh-huh.
And I think part of that has to do, or a large part of that has to do with the fact that the whole country has been operating at two different speeds. It's beyond me. So while I, you know, the sales that I made in June, it was, it's a hodgepodge of home goods, clothes, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, I honestly don't see July being much better.
Yep.
Mainly because of the state of the country and the way that the COVID is impacting everyone else outside of the East Coast in a totally different way.
Yep.
And you know, in the speed of which it's impacting these other states, the way that it's like everyone's experiencing what we just experienced here in New Jersey and New York. They're experiencing it now, but like 2 months later.
Yeah.
So people are holding their pocketbooks a lot more closely, which is smart. And you know, I think that, you know, as I'm a human being, I wouldn't want to be too careful, you know?
Right.
So it's tricky. It's been, June was definitely a little crazy in terms of what I had forecasted. I think it'll probably be the same for July, you know, through the summer as things start to unravel.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm obviously curious about what the end of the year looks like, because the end of the year is a big selling season for just big retail in general.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what that looks like and how that'll play out and what I can do to try to roll out just new strategies to try to sell through Poshmark and
get
some inventory moves.
Your approach to this, like, it just makes me like, I literally just want to like go to a thrift store right now and like do this myself. Like, it sounds like it's so much fun.
It's really fun. And it ultimately for me, I just feel I'm the type of person that I don't buy anything new ever.
Wow.
And I am super, super reduced, reuse, recycle. Secondhand is like first in our house.
Wow.
And, you know, where you can at least.
Yep.
And I just think right now it's like the perfect time to get to be inventive, to figure out a way to upcycle your kitchen cabinets or, you know, things that you're thinking about buying new. Just figure out a new way to repurpose.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have, if you can't do that, find someone in your area that you can donate to or go on consignment with to not totally lose out on whatever it was that you spent on that item in the first place.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the last couple of months have been like a real lesson in just sort of looking around and being like, I don't really need that much, you know?
Right.
Like, I say this all the time, and we say this like every time I talk to a guest and if clothing comes up, it's like, we talk about how like since March, like I've been wearing the same like t-shirt and like leggings combo, for like 20 weeks now. Like, you know, I have a closet full of clothes that haven't seen the light of day, and you know, I'm doing my skincare
the
routine.
Single light.
Yeah. Literally they're literally like turning shades darker because they have not touched sun. And just thinking about how quick I was in the past, just because of how much faster life moves when you're not living through a global health crisis, just like how quickly I was to be like, oh, I need that. Oh, I need that. Oh, I got to get this. And like, I've just been very, I think like humbled is the word, just by like how much I really do have and how little I need. And from like a grateful, you know, perspective, just to be happy that I'm like safe and healthy, but also just like when this eventually kind of ends, and I know it probably won't be for a while, I really just, I hope that I take that mentality with me of just like, you kind of have everything you need. And if you think that you need something, like, you probably already have it in some way, shape, or form, or you could find it, like not new, or you could make it. And like, that's like a whole different mindset for me that I just wasn't really doing a lot of, you know, before this.
The one thing that I will, the one gift that COVID has given me particularly, you know, and all of us, is just the gift of time, more time being spent at home.
Mm-hmm.
and a larger period of reflection to be able to see what it is that you love and what it is that you haven't been spending as much time able to do, like hobby wise. And I particularly love, recently, one of the things that I did was I made a DIY yarn wall art sculpture, and I'll have to send you a photo of it later.
Okay. Like, what can't you do?
It's just one of those things that I was just out and about in on a hike, and I found this, it's like a total lame story, but I found this stick and I brought it home because I thought it was just a really great relic from a really great trip. And I wanted to make it into something to represent a part of the trip that would have a home as an art piece in my house. And I ended up making like a really cool yarn art sculpture out of it. And it now it means like so much to me. And I hope that other people are able to go and spend time, if you know, with their families and their kids and their loved ones to really soak up the time that we all have with each other, because it is, this is obviously, you know, just with COVID and quarantine and shutdown, it's totally unprecedented, and it's absolutely nothing anyone in any of our lifetimes has ever experienced.
That's right.
And right now it's all about pivoting, being creative, using what you have, and figuring out a way to just get shit done and just get it done.
I could not agree more. And I am laughing to myself because, and I will post this, when I first started my job as a reporter, I would often do the viral kind of like, here's the stories, here's the things that everyone's talking about online. And I'm remembering very clearly 2014 Free People was literally selling a yarn covered stick for $68, and and everyone was like, what the fuck? and it's like, because everyone looked at that and was like, if you really wanted a yarn stick, you could go, like, that is available to you. And I love that you're like, I made it and it represents a trip, because Free People was really out here being like, hey, buy this stick for $68. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to be back with the product that you bought, which I think, if I read it correctly in your email, should help everyone if they're interested in potentially starting their own Poshmark shop. So we will be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, we're back. So, Tanette, tell me about what you brought. And I know it has to do with kind of like, you know, expediting the Poshmark like business side of things.
Totally. So there's this really incredible app. It's called Seller Insight. It is available on the App Store. You can download it on your iPhone, your iPad. And I believe it works through Android as well.
Cool.
And it is this incredibly robust app that aggregates all of your inventory reports and your seller reports. And it creates a daily reporting on how your sales are doing. It tracks your metrics through what your sales are. It gives you, it lets you know what your cost of good is. So it tells you by breaking down all of the items in your closet what the cost per good is, and you can also use it to track and measure what your goal cost of good is.
Cool.
So for me right now, my cost of good is anywhere between like $6 to $12, and if I were looking to expand and grow my current inventory, I would be able to look at the app and the insights that it provides me through all of the data and better track how to get there. Like what type, how retail clothes are doing versus the home goods, how shoes sell versus purses.
That is so interesting. So like you could, and this isn't just Poshmark, like you could do this for Etsy, you could do this for like any sort of thing, or is this just Poshmark?
I believe this is just for Poshmark.
Interesting.
Yes. But I wonder if there is a way that you would be able to, because it's basically like a tricked out Excel.
Yeah.
And that it imports the data that you place into the app. So, and it's data that you bring in from your Poshmark reports, which export into an Excel spreadsheet.
That's so incredible.
Technically you could actually, if you were an eBay seller, you could export all of your data and put it into an Excel sheet and then probably re-upload it and import it in through the system.
Uh-huh.
But I'm 100% confident on the way that it works with Poshmark.
That is less so confident cool. on. I have zero Excel skills. So like that is so cool, because like even if I was selling a lot on Poshmark, I feel like that missing piece of it for me would be like the actual, like seeing the numbers and being like, this is how much you spent versus this is how much you've, and this is how much, you know, you need to make to break even, or here's how much you can afford to bring to the Salvation Army to buy new inventory. And like, I don't know that I would have the time, patience, or even like, experience it with Excel to be able to sit down and create a spreadsheet like that.
A spreadsheet that works that way. You know what? I have something like that set up. I actually have never, I personally am a huge data cruncher. I live in Excel. Wow. I live in Google Sheets. I cannot read a chart if it's not in an Excel form. I think that's part of just like the logistics event production person in me, where so much of my full-time work is like data and analyzing it and figuring out the best way to synthesize it and make it digestible to the modern day human. So I do a lot of work in Excel and in Google Sheets. And I've created before using Seller Insight, which there is a version of it that is free. But for some of the more advanced features, you have the option to sign up for like the next level of subscription. But before, when I first started, I just started it in a Google Sheet, and that tracks everything. And I made it so that it completely synthesizes with the reports that Poshmark pulls for you when you want to analyze what your metrics are for how well you sold on a month-by-month basis, or if you want to run your reports quarterly, you can do that as well.
This is fascinating. Like, this is now all I want to do with my life. I just want to be you. That is so cool. So what is, oh my gosh, like I can't even, I just looked down at the timer and we've been talking for almost 55 minutes, and it's like, I'm going to have to do like a double episode with you. Like,
I know.
In a few months, like I need you to come back and like, I don't know, like what do you want from your business in the next, 6 months? Like, what are you hoping for? What goals are you projecting?
So that's a really good question. I am working on two different tangents right now with my business. Both really exciting and both really fulfilling. So while I have my daily work on my Poshmark and everything that goes into making sales, that is fulfilling on a very direct, individual, personal level.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have the work that I'm doing socially and on social media to try and raise awareness and to try and amplify Black voices, my own included, and creating space for my fellow Black resellers.
Nice.
What's really crazy, Caroline, is that when I started on Poshmark when I started on Poshmark, one of the first things that I noticed was that all of the successful resellers had Instagram pages. The second thing I noticed was that all of the successful resellers through Poshmark specifically were white faces. And it took me several months just to even find other black and brown people from the reseller community.
Wow.
That were on the same timeline and on the same trajectory and basically just doing the same thing as me, selling on Poshmark. And so when I did finally find those people, I mean, it was amazing. It totally blew up. Like it was like the next level of what I had started and created for myself in my reselling business. And in the last few weeks of all of the waves of just social awareness around the ways that Black people have been and continue to be, you know,
oppressed,
just totally oppressed. Mm-hmm. I immediately thought back to when I created my Instagram account and how Instagram, I mean, it starts at so many different levels.
Yeah.
So for me, when I started my Instagram account, the first batch of people that it suggested as accounts to follow were non-Black people, yeah. White people.
Yeah.
And for me, I thought, okay, well, you know, this is a space for white people to succeed. Like, you know, most of the people are stay-at-home moms and they have a lot of time. And, you know, how else are you going to be able to successfully build your business if you're not in those categories? And after a while, after I started to follow and, you know, build real, true connections with people, we found each other. And so recently, in the last few weeks, I started this campaign where every week I promote 100 Black-owned reselling and vintage-owned businesses. And everyone, it's a five-part series. I share 100 people throughout one day. And it's a list and a group of people that's aggregated through folks that have tagged their own friends, families, and other mentors that they have that are Black-owned vintage shops or Black-owned reseller businesses. Nice.
Yeah. Well, I think someone either reposted you to the stories or I don't know. I found it. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? And then I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. And then I fell like face first into everything. Yeah, that is a great idea. I think that have you talked to Poshmark at all? And I'm happy to also send an email, but like, why are all the people that are coming up white?
That's a great question. So when I dropped my first list, the list blew up. It was so crazy. And I, you may not know this, but I am like a total introvert. I do not do like social media at all whatsoever. Wow. So when I posted this list, it totally blew up. There were so many responses. People were coming at me from every direction saying like, thank you so much. I met this really incredible mentor, or I made 10 sales last night, or my social media accounts have never had like a higher level of following. Just so many different responses and reactions to literally just being tagged on a post and people resharing that post. And so when I did the first series, the next week I sent a message to Poshmark and I said, hey, I've got this dope series that I'm posting about Black resellers. If you want to help amplify our voices, because majority of the people in this community are selling on Poshmark, you know, here is a link to the post. And if you could please help us get some level of just get greater attention to what I'm trying to do and what we're all trying to do. That would be awesome. And they were like, hell yeah, we're going to reshare. Good. We're going to repost. Nice. And then they did. And it was awesome. It was awesome. And so, but it's a part of a continued call to awareness also, because I posted that first list and then I sent it to them. And then they reposted one of those posts, mm-hmm. and not like all five, yeah. and which was like cool.
Yeah.
There were 100 people, you only shared like 20.
Yep.
But it's a weird, you know, it's weird because for me at least, I want, it's a weird line between being someone who uses their platform, being someone who's asking their platform to help amplify our voices, and then also calling them out when they like fall short, you know. This is going to be the fourth week of the 100 black owned vintage shops and resellers list, that which means that in the last 4 weeks everyone will have access to over 400 different black owned businesses to shop from.
Wow.
And it's totally compelling and incredible, because I started this list from the lack of acknowledgement from the business that I use, the platform that I used to run my business, which is Poshmark.
Yep.
It was so totally just enraging after Blackout Tuesday and everyone posting their black squares with the hashtag Blackout Tuesday, and you know, on a corporate level, all of these corporate businesses doing the same thing, and then the next day they just go right back into you know, business as usual, posting and trying to sell and just totally giving away
yeah.
everything that we're all here for.
Yep.
And so when that happened, I was like, well, what the fuck? Like, why aren't you, like, if I'm running a business and I see that people work in my business that are being, like, just totally just totally victimized because of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
I'm going to do everything in my power to raise them up, to make sure they are seen, to give them a voice. And so, and when you see on a business level, when these brands don't show up,
yeah,
then to show up for your own people, which is why I was like, oh, let's just see if people will nip at this idea of a 100 black resellers list, because Poshmark has over 40 million users and they haven't created a single fucking list, which is insane.
Yeah, that is
like,
insane. You're out there and you're also like making you're making a lot of money too. They're getting 20% of your $8,000 like profit, so they should be warming up to you.
The whole point of all of this that's happening in the world, especially this country, is putting all of this, making everything accountable. You're accountable for your actions. We're all accountable.
Yep.
And so I have no shame saying, okay, why aren't you doing X?
Yeah.
And also, while you're not doing X, I'm going to take the onus of doing it on because you're not doing it, because we need this.
Yeah.
We need this. I've heard from so many, oh my gosh, it's so crazy. I've gotten so many responses from people saying, like, I never had the fucking balls to even like open to start an account here or to start a business here or to do what I wanted to do until you tagged me in this post.
Wow.
And now I have people following me and reaching out to me and asking me like what my name is and who actually care. And so it's really hard because there's a lot of noise and social media especially, and it's hard when you're a small person and a small you just feel so small when you're just in your one little tiny apartment and you just don't know what the hell is gonna happen for you, and you're just trying your shooting your shot,
yes.
you know? And when one person tags you in a post and says, this is a Black-owned business that you need to know, who needs to be on your list, who people need to know about, like, that means the world. It opens doors.
Yep.
And so I'm glad that I was able to see the lack of job that Poshmark or ThredUp or any of these companies have been doing, because yep. I've been following and they're not doing.
Yeah.
And it's very like strategic. It's very corporately strategic in what and how things align with their corporate messaging, their marketing strategy. I work in corporate America. I know how this shit works.
Yes.
So it's very real too.
Right. None of this is random.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, no one's dumb. Yes. It's like so simple and easy. And I know that there's another human being on the other side of the computer or the phone whatever, who is seeing my cries, other people's pleas to have their voice amplified and raised up. And the last thing I want to say is today when I woke up, right before I shared my closet, right before I shared all bajillion listings that I have, I read this incredible quote by Toni Morrison, and it reads, I tell my students, when you get these jobs that you have been so brilliantly trained for, just remember that your real job is that you are free. You need to free somebody else. You have some power. If you have some power, then your job is to empower somebody else. This is not just a grab bag candy game.
I love that quote. I think it's one of my
favorite. It's about passing the torch.
Yeah, it's pulling
passing
people up. When you are up, you reach behind you, you grab someone else, you pull them up. They reach behind them, they pull them up. And I think especially right now, you know, there is not one newspaper, one network television channel, one magazine. Like, we all have voices and platforms and ways to scream. And right now people are listening, and, you know, like, silence on any of these topics is being complicit to, like, the systems, whether big or small, like, in place to oppress. And so if you're like, if you're lucky enough to get your voice out there, you use that voice to make someone else's voice louder. And I mean, that is just how it should be. That's a great thing to keep in mind, you know, going through your day.
Totally.
I'm so inspired by, I'm so happy that I found your Instagram. So it's Shop with Tanette on Instagram. Is that also your Poshmark closet, or is it something else?
It sure is. I like to keep it consistent.
I was gonna say, I love a consistent brand. Yes. Okay. Yes. Amazing. You guys, you have to follow her on Instagram. I mean, like, look, hide your credit card, but follow her on Instagram, because you're gonna have like hundreds and hundreds of Black vintage sellers and resellers and Poshmarkers and thread uppers to follow. And if you must go shopping, and we all know that, especially here, we all must go shopping. Buying secondhand is a very, you know, eco-friendly, sustainable choice. And putting your money towards one or more of these 400 essentially small business, Black-owned businesses, is another great way to spend your money. So it's a win-win-win for everybody. I am so excited to look at your closet, and I'm excited to also have your phone number now, because now I'm just going to like text you and be like, how much did you pay for this? Like, how much did you get this? But I'm so serious about, please hire me to be your West Coast team. I will go to the Salvation Army's here and the Goodwill's here. I'll find good stuff. I'm like, I'm literally like ready to go. Like, I'm ready to get in my car and like go scouting.
I
now.
Know.
I can't wait.
Soon enough.
Tanette, thank you so much for coming, for your time,
thank you.
Telling everybody about Poshmark. And just like, I hope that this kind of, I hope everyone does their own store. I know that Poshmark has like a referral link, and if you decide to give it a shot on Poshmark, I'm gonna put Tanette's referral link to Poshmark in the show notes. So if you decide to start your own Poshmark, go through her link because it means she'll get a little bit of credit for you joining. So it's Shop Insights is the app, correct?
It's Seller
Insights. Sorry, Seller Insights.
And okay. Yeah, I'll send you the link for that one directly.
Incredible.
But I do want to say to people, don't, if you have anything that you are thinking, no one will possibly want this. I promise you, there is someone who will probably want it.
Famous and words.
Donation is good.
Yes.
But it also lessens the life cycle of your item actually making it into someone else's closet.
That's right.
Especially now that we're in COVID, these donation centers, certain parts of the country started to reopen. Donation centers are being hit by like just crazy.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, you know, if you go on to Poshmark, reach out to some resellers that are in your area. If you have items that you want to simply donate, offer to donate your stuff to them, to their inventory, and you can help their business.
That is such a great idea.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, I didn't really think about it, and it's a whole other conversation altogether, but donating doesn't necessarily mean you're continuing the life cycle. Because the donations, right. the donation volume is so high.
And half the stuff doesn't even make it into the actual store.
That's right.
It usually goes straight into a landfill.
Yeah.
I tell you this, when I go walk through my neighborhood, and I see all of this stuff that people throw out that says left for free. If no one's taking it at the end of the night, it gets picked up by the garbage men and it goes into the truck and it goes into a landfill.
Yeah.
So it's really important, you know, just from a sustainability level to make sure that your pre-loved items have a longer life cycle than just you. And they see life beyond your own shelf.
See, you guys, starting a Poshmark business is good for the earth. I want you all to do it. I feel like I'm going to go on right now and see what I have in my closet that I need to start moving. Probably everything that isn't a pair of leggings or a t-shirt can go. All of my bras out the door. Tanette, this was so much fun. I need to have you back. Like, we're going to have, I think during the holidays, I have to have you back. Maybe we can do a whole episode about like shopping secondhand for holidays, because I don't know what world I'm going to be buying stuff for holidays.
I'll definitely be sharing this with my family, but I will tell you one thing. Over the years, I've gotten a lot of stocking stuffers, and none of which are resellable. so I just have a whole box of like.